Sean Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are Sean Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And here we go. Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. Today is Friday. You know what day tomorrow is?
I think it would be Saturday, but maybe you're going to fool me with something.
Well, it is Saturday, and it also is, it's my park day.
I didn't know that.
Well, that's why I'm here to tell you that. 7,500 volunteers expected to help the city parks. Yeah, they pulled together 29,000 acres of parkland in New York City, and the volunteers are going to try to help clean up, and government can't do it all. And since 1995, the Partnership for Parks has supported groups that have given over 6 million volunteer hours. So there are 150 events if you want to get involved, 311. There are things for kids like puppet performances and activities. All five boroughs, John Painting, you could go to all five boroughs and do something. And you want to know why I know all those facts?
Well, you're the mayor.
That's exactly right.
I figured that was the answer. It was an easy answer. I think, and I have not been there yet, and I want to, one of the newest parks that the city has is that Brooklyn Bridge Park.
Spectacular.
I watched them build it.
Yep.
And I wondered what exactly it was going to turn out to be.
Each one of the six piers, I think it's six piers, is different. The first one you walk, it's a great place to sit and contemplate beautiful views of the skyline. Maybe they'll have concerts there. There's steps down. It'd be perfect for that. The one at the other end, the far end, that one's almost also done. I think that's for games, volleyball and that kind of but more organized sports. And then there are like four piers in the middle, and we put more money in, some of that money that we had for the Javits Center, which is never going to get done, no new Javits Center. And so we're going to put more money into that. And over the next few years, most of that will all get done.
I mean, if that isn't the priciest little slice of real estate in the whole wide world with the view of
the
view of Manhattan.
Yeah, sure.
And the harbor.
I mean, and it's helped the whole neighborhood because people have access to another park and the views of that and that sort of thing. And you take a look, same thing on the Hudson River Park. You know, all of these parks are just opening up the city. That's why people keep coming here.
I guess it's maybe the Queen. Is it the Queen Mary that comes in over to the Brooklyn Pier?
There are three places ships go. There's the West Side, but a lot of the cruise ships go there, but the smaller ones. They look enormous, but they are small by today's standards. The big ones can't get in there because they stick too far out in the river. Then there are two places big ones go. Red Hook, which is where you see the QM2. Some other big ships. And then over in Bayonne, they also have a competitive facility. That's New Jersey. But I gather that both spots have worked out. Certainly Red Hook. You know, Red Hook's the next Greenwich Village, I've always thought. Artist communities, old buildings, the loft buildings you'll turn into great spaces and great views of New York City.
Again, spectacular.
And I'm told that the people that get off the boat don't have a problem. They think it's fun to take a cab or a bus in or go to a subway and then take a subway into Manhattan or to out into Brooklyn and Queens.
And those parks are just to the north of there.
Right, exactly.
That we were just talking about.
And Brooklyn is so hot, so many new restaurants and places that getting off the boat in Red Hook is put you closer than getting off the boat in the West Side.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate that the city planners back 50, 60 years ago felt it necessary to put roadways on the edges of the
that
water.
I think, maybe wrong, historians will call quickly if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of that was Robert Moses. I mean, the idea was, in all fairness, you need roads. And if you put them in
every
the middle,
every city did it though. Your city,
right?
Of Boston,
if you put it in the middle, so many people lose their houses. So easier to put it along the water. The bad news is you cut off the water. And if you remember the brouhaha, there was this Westway project. They were going to bury the West
Side. How could it forget it?
Went on forever and ever and ever. What a shame they didn't do it.
Yeah, because it would have taken it would have sunk the road on the ground.
Absolutely. And I don't know. There was some fish there, snail.
Well, they tried to do that in your hometown of Boston with the Big Dig, which turned into one of the
Well, they did put that underground. Right. It just the dig there was into the taxpayers' wallets. The federal government paid for it. I don't know. It was supposed to be $1 billion, and it was $1 trillion, or something like that.
All right. Obviously, the theme of the week is terror, safety, homeland security. You flew to London this week to check out what they do. What'd you come back with?
They have three sets of cameras that we talked about. One is for congestion pricing. A second set of cameras is what they would call, we would call the Ring of Steel security, but basically the same kind of cameras in the same places. And there's some technical reasons why you might want to have a separate set of cameras, but basically the same thing. And then closed circuit TV, CCTV they call it, in the subways. Now, the congestion pricing cameras read your license plate number and send you a bill for entering. The security cameras...
That's just the way the system works. Yeah. They don't have an easy pass. You just drive through and you get a bill.
I think so. Then there is the Ring of Steel cameras. There they try to take two pictures, one of your license plate and one of the people in the front seat, because you're coming at the camera. And they narrow things down to one lane on, I think it's eight roads that you use to get into what they call the City of London, the financial district. We could say, let's say, downtown, similar kind of thing. And they blocked off all the small roads that went in and out, and they say people don't have a problem with it, but I assume that's right. And then the CCTV cameras in the subways, you know, you can have signs up, this area is being observed, that might act as a deterrent to some people. But fundamentally, those cameras are used if something goes wrong, and afterwards to try to figure out who did it or what happened. And the technology does get better. Camera can tell, or the computer hooked up to the camera, if there's a package left there. Why? Because other things are moving. That's something that wasn't there before, and it's not moving. And so you can, you know, not perfect, but the cameras that, the computers that look at your face, facial recognition, which a lot of people are working on, is nowhere near ready for that. It can sort of tell a little bit, but not much. So on one hand, you got the ones that charge you. On the other hand, you got the ones you use after the fact. And then the ones in the middle are the security cameras, the Ring of Steel cameras, because they can catch if you're coming in with a stolen car. And then they have enough cameras so they can follow you around the city. So they use cops on bicycles, which they think are much more effective because you get through the traffic much quicker. So when a stolen car comes in, they send the bicycle cops after them, and they say they grab
them. They
have
much narrower streets than we do as well.
Yeah, most of them. Yeah. They are, but somewhat narrower. And they have, London did has you, a lot of traffic.
Did you ask the question, have the Ring of Steel cameras stopped an event?
Well, the first thing about security is you can never answer that question, because if nothing takes place, you don't know why nothing takes place. Okay. Did nobody want to do something, or did they want to do it and was scared away?
You still ask the question, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we have examples here. Remember, there was on the Brooklyn Bridge, the guy sent back a message, it's too hot was the code word or something. He just looked at all the security and said, I'm not going to be able to get through this. So visible security, you could question, why do you make the security so visible? Because you're telling the bad guy what to avoid. Well, okay, but it also scares them off. Another strategy is random stuff. That's what you do in the subways. You open packages randomly in random stations, and you never know when you're going in whether or not somebody's going to... And in fact, there was a guy on the Brooklyn Bridge, one of the bridges, wasn't Brooklyn Bridge, one of the bridges, who left his... Whitestone or Throgs Neck, I think, halfway through... maybe it was a Tribro, left the car and ran off.
Oh, why? Yeah, that happened a week or so ago.
Yeah, it was a stolen truck, right. And he saw the checkpoint and said, left the car and went off. So each of these things work in various ways. I don't think there's any of this technology that would have stopped the guy in Times Square.
Except because the license plate. The license plate was stolen, wasn't it?
I don't think so.
Or it came from a junkyard.
Yeah, but I'm not so sure. I don't know if a license plate was. You can't read if it's the same kind of car. Maybe you can. But the point is, if you had a regular car that you owned, registered, never broke the law, nobody's going to know. Right. And technology doesn't help you with that.
So, do you think that it makes sense to put the Ring of Steel or something similar to it in Times Square?
We're doing, not Times Square, all of Midtown. We're doing it all of downtown. Remember, right, that was part of correct. The deal to keep people here downtown. And we have in our budget a couple $100 million to do it in Midtown. And so we will do it. Does it guarantee everybody's safety? No. Does it increase the chances of things staying safe? Yes. And is it the kind of investment we should be making? You betcha, man. We're going to do it. I don't care how bad our budget is. We are not going to jeopardize the safety of people in the city, and we'll do as much as we can. Now, there are limitations. You can't put a cop on every corner. You can't put a firehouse on every block. You know, there are so when you say, well, let's do everything we can to keep you safe, there are some limits. But, we're going to use technology, use training, make sure the size of the police department is adequate to prevent and the fire department to respond. And, you know, crime is down 9 years in a row. It continues to come down this year. And with the size police department we have, I just want to make sure it doesn't go any lower. And if there are special needs, I want to make sure we get those people that we need with the skills that are important to keep it going.
All right, I want to continue this in just a second. Please let me take a break, sir, and we will get back. Also, let me remind everybody, if you've got the question for the mayor, 800-321-0710, your best chance of getting in is doing it early, 800-321-0710. Be right back.
Mayor Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
23 minutes after the hour, 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Let me see here. We got a lot of flashing lights there. 800-321-0710 if you want to give it a try, if you've got a question. All right. President was in town. A lot made over the cuts of New York terror money for trains and port. You spent a few minutes with the president?
Yeah, he came to One Police Plaza to shake hands and say congratulations, thank you, whatever, to a lot of the cops who had worked on the Saturday night bomb thing a couple weeks ago. The mounted cop who I took to dinner was there. There were some bomb squad men and women, some women there, I think, from the bomb squad as well. And he shook hands with a lot of them. He got a tour of the real-time crime center, which really does help us in solving a lot of crimes. He asked some intelligent questions, and they gave him a dog and pony show kind of tour. And we gave him, it's Kelly's idea, a NYPD jacket with POTUS written on it, the President of the United States, for those that don't know what POTUS, P-O-T-U-S, stands for. But I talked to Rahm Emanuel in the morning. Rahm is the key guy, the president's advisor. And, I said, look, the city remains a top target, and he understands that. There's no question about that. And we've just got to continue to devote the resources to protect the people of the city. I will do that, all our resources, but we need some help. Washington just has to do its fair share in helping us, and I think he got the message. You can yell at him, or you can make the case and say, come on now, we've got to work together on this, and that's a strategy. I spent some time on the phone with Schumer and King, Chuck and Peter. They and Anita Lowy's actually worked pretty hard on this as well, trying to get us some more money. There are lots of different pots of money. So this is one time, and I think we did get treated unfairly, although the White House makes the case if you count stimulus money, we got more. A lot of it's complicated, and so everybody can hear what they want to say. But the question is, are 09 money delivered this year counted as last year or this year? And that would make it either gone up or down depending on when you counted it, and it's that kind of stuff.
Did the president make any acknowledgement?
Then I talked to him when he came in before he went into the room. Kelly and I sat, usual jokes of how are you, and, but then, we did talk about it, and he said he had talked to Emanuel and that he understood. And, we'll work together with the guy. He's got everybody banging on him, saying we want money for this place, that place. Everybody tries to make a case that they're the target. I think it's obvious New York is more of a target. In theory, I guess they could strike a cornfield, but not likely. So as the mayor, I'm never going to say we got enough. No mayor would ever say that. But in this case, I think when it comes to Homeland Security money, New York really is in a category of its own. And it isn't so much deserve, I don't think it's the right word. It's that it's appropriate. It is a response to a real threat. The numbers, if you look at just quantitatively, this is where the target, this is where the money should go. And there are other federal programs. I once jokingly said we don't need any agriculture money. We'll give up on that if we get a fair share of Homeland Security. And then it turns out we have a $2 million grant from the Agriculture Department for trees. So that's
and you're not giving that back.
We're not giving that back.
Right.
But in seriousness here, I think with Chuck and Pete and Nita and the rest of the delegation, it's Congress in the end that gives the president the money. The president's representatives, secretaries and staffs, they whack it up. So it's both sides of both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, both sides of the aisle. We've just got to keep making the case to everyone. And I think, you know, in a nice ways, but forcefully, were we happy? No. Do I understand? Yes. Do I think they were right? No. Will we do better later? Yes. Think so.
Okay.
Can you follow all of that?
Well, I think I do. Can you add anything to the raids, information that you might have about these raids yesterday up and down the East Coast?
No. I mean, it would appear that he got some money. The federal, at this point, that's a federal thing. Joint Terrorism Task Force, of which we're part of, executed the, the warrants or whatever, arrested these people, and one in Pakistan, three in the United States, correct. So, you know, we'll see how that comes out. Our big focus now is going back, looking and seeing what could we have done better, keep training, keep looking for response, and check. And you got to be careful. I can't close every city every time somebody says, I think there's something to worry about. But at the same time, you want everybody to report it, and then let the professionals decide where to. And it's always going to be a risk. You can always make a mistake.
Right, we had a water bottle thing on Friday. We had the gasoline cans yesterday.
I mean, by that argument, everybody's going to lock themselves in their house and never come out and the tourists win.
No, not going to happen. I read that Police Commissioner Kelly wants to expand his overseas terrorists. Number of people over there.
We are, you know, a lot of that is paid for by the donations to the police fund. We keep looking at where activity takes place. You need to have the idea of putting one of the NYPD cops overseas is twofold. One, to report back how other municipalities and federal governments deploy their resources, what they use. The other is to look and see what tactics the terrorists are using. So subways, you look to see what they did, or those the things that are stopped and things that unfortunately go ahead and kill people. And also to have personal relations with some of the other.
I've heard it's very important. I mean, it's worked very, very well for us.
It's worked very well. Has it stopped anything?
No.
Yeah, come back. You don't know. And that's the thing about security, and that's what makes it so hard. What is an appropriate amount of resources to devote, and where do you put your resources? If nothing happens, did you do it right, or just nobody wanted to? If something happens, well, you know, you can say you did it wrong. On the other hand, you can't be every place, although everybody's going to blame you.
Of course. Absolutely. All right. We've reached the half hour. Again, the reminder, 800-321-0710. And on the half hour, we'll get back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg in a moment. Joe Bartlett.
Give John a call now. The John Gambling Show. 800-321-0710.
Minutes before 9 o'clock in the morning. Good morning. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here, and you've got your soccer jersey
on. Believe it or not, the USA Bid Committee submitted its bid today to become the 2018 or 2022 World Cup host country. You know how old I'm going to be in 2022? You will be in your mid-30s. I will be older. By a lot.
You won't be playing soccer.
Well, I won't be playing soccer, but I am on the USA bid committee, and we've worked with New Jersey to prepare the New York, New Jersey bid. It's a countrywide bid, but our part of it. This region would host up to six of the matches. It'd be great for the city. It makes a lot of money. And back in 1994, the World Cup had a $100 million impact on New York City. And the Jets and the Giants, as you know, are trying to get a Super Bowl here. Both of those things really would bring a lot of business in South Africa. It's an enormous thing. Now, whether they're getting the tourists that they thought they were getting, I don't know. But, you know, we would do very well. Plenty of communications and transportation and security and all of that sort of stuff. Now, these sporting events are enormous.
Would that include a new stadium of some sort, or don't you know?
I don't know yet. I
mean, it's,
you know,
way down the road.
Yeah, you could use the new Meadowlands Stadium. I don't know what they haven't got a name for it yet.
No.
You know, there are great stadiums all over the country, but soccer is one of these enormous sports. So is cricket. You have no idea how many cricket fields New York City parks have. because there's whole parts of the city where cricket is the big sport from where immigrants come from. And I once had my late and ex-father-in-law explain to me the rules of cricket. But he is deceased, and I lost the paper where he had it.
The diagram.
I tried to explain baseball to him. That's a fair.
And he
looked at me and said, "Stupid game." I looked at him and said, "Well, I like baseball, but it's your game."
Speaking of sports, LeBron James to the Knicks. What do you think? I mean, that's the rumor.
Well, rumors are that both the Knicks and the Nets would like to get him. I would never take sides in that, but I think it'd be great for New York if he would come here, and if asked. If he calls me and says, "What's it like to live in New York?" I'll give him a big sales pitch for New York. Absolutely. I love living in New York. My kids love living in New York. I think LeBron James would love living in New York, and it is the world's greatest stage.
Interesting idea floated this week, move the Islanders to Queens.
I saw that. I actually ran into Jeff Wilpon yesterday. He said, you know, people have suggested it. I don't think it's gone very far. But
the Whitestone area is high on your list.
Mets have a lot of land to the east, I think it is, maybe to the west, of Citi Field. And it would be great to have another team here. Whether or not the owners of the team, Charlie Wang out in Nassau, I guess he is in, yeah. Whether he would sell it, bring it in, I don't know what the deal would be. You know, these sports teams, if it's done with private money, I'm 100% in favor. If they build a new stadium, we'll always do a little infrastructure that we do of, you know, some road changes and subway and rail changes.
Speaking of the subways, there is a thought now coming out of the MTA about the potential of being more efficient when it comes to repair, of shutting lines down, not just doing weekend
and nighttime
work.
Well, Jay Waldner's trying to do new things. I think this guy's the best appointee the governor has ever made. The governor actually has made some other appointees that are pretty good. It's easy to go criticize, but there are some that are really good. But Waldner, and I talked about him when I was in London because he came from London where he ran the subways, and they have nothing but good things to say about him, and he's continued here. And so he's going to try new things. That's great.
It would seem impactful, but obviously the question is, which is more efficient, to do it piecemeal or do it all at one time?
I have no idea.
You can only figure it out by doing it, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose, but I will tell you that if your question is how to take a Band-Aid off, no question.
Yeah, do it fast.
Bang.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I think, you know, when you're walking in this little hill, I try to jog up the hill. It's better than walking up the hill. It just takes less energy, I think.
The Charter Revision Commission is meeting.
Yes. They have a whole series of meetings, you know, keep going.
And some of the issues, what are some of the issues that they are looking at? I know they're looking at term limits.
Term limits, we have a commitment to have something on the ballot for two terms, yes or no. And if it's no, then it stays at three terms. But there are lots of people who have come up with ideas. The one that was in the paper today, there was an article about nonpartisan elections, which a lot of people think is good. I happen to think that it is.
What is
only
a
nonpartisan election? It doesn't disenfranchise anybody. The way the system works right now, if you are a member of a party, you can vote in the primary, if there is a primary, and then the survivor of that primary is on the ballot where everybody can vote. Now, there's two things. Number one, a smaller percentage every day of the electorate is a member of the party. Less than half the people are members of parties in a lot of cities. New York is probably about that. So half the people are disenfranchised in picking who's going to be on the ballot. Number two, when you have a city where one party so dominates, it's almost impossible, unless you're Bloomberg and you spend an awful lot of money, or Rudy, also people point to him. Yeah, because the public really wanted a change, and then they liked him after the first term. So he did get through running not as a Democrat in an overwhelming Democratic city. I got through not as a Democrat in an overwhelming Democratic city three times. But it's generally whoever wins the Democratic primary in this city, although it could be a Republican in another state or another city, they're automatically elected. Just there is no contest. You're kidding yourself if you think there are. Which is why some parties like it, because they don't have, everybody doesn't get a vote. But it's, you're literally disenfranchising half the people. And what I tried to do and paid a lot of money back then, in my first year in office, I think it was, to try to convince people to change the charter and have nonpartisan elections. Everybody who wants to run would be on the ballot. They could identify whether they are a member of a party, and if so, which one. That's fine. No problem with that. What, no reason why you should be ashamed of what
you could
members.
So you could have 5, 6, 7, 8 candidates?
Sure. And everybody can vote. And then you pick the top two. There are a number of different ways. Pick the top two and have them have a runoff, or use proportional representation where you rank them from highest to lowest, and so you sort of get a weighted average of what people want. Those are some details. But the real essence of nonpartisan elections is today half the people don't have a vote. And so unless you work your ways through one of the parties, in this case, in this city, it's the Democratic Party, you almost have no chance of ever getting elected.
Now, do you think that there is a chance that this will make the ballot?
I don't know. First thing is, it's up to the Charter Revision Commission. Nobody should question what my view is. I think we should do it, but I'm not pushing them to do it. I want them to make their decisions, and there are lots of other issues. There are people who want to get rid of the borough presidents. I happen to think the borough presidents provide some real value at a local level. I really do. And some people want to get rid of the public advocate. I will say I think de Blasio is doing a good job, but you can make the case that when you have an elected government, you don't need a public advocate. The elected officials are the public advocate. That's what people vote for. Why do you need somebody else? But that's something that they should look at. There are all sorts of technical changes to the charter. So what I'd urge people to do is go to nyc.gov or 311. You can find out where the hearings are and attend them and express yourself. If you don't go and you don't vote, I don't have a lot of sympathy. You can't just complaining about it. If you do something, if you don't like it.
Let's see here. How about sick days, paid sick days? Tough question.
Big companies typically provide paid sick days. Small companies, generally very small ones, do not. The real question here is, in an economic downturn, do you want to increase the costs of small businesses? It's desirable, I suppose, to people to be able to take time off without losing their wages. But the other side of that coin is, why should an employer have to pay when you don't do the work? And you can, in a debate, take either side and have a credible case to make. We'll see what happens, whether there's a bill that passes the city council. There are ideas to say, well, a small company should give fewer days than a bigger company because they can afford it. But I don't know that that's a very good argument. What's wrong with being bigger and employing more people? Any expense hurts businesses, and any use of funds may benefit employees. So there's no easy answer to that. And I think in the backdrop of the current economic climate, it's a question that takes on a lot more urgency in terms of the damage that you could do. And also the question is, what's the role of government? Should government be interfering in the contract between employer and employee? Why does the government get involved in that? Now, we do have minimum wage. Mm-hmm. We do have safety things, so the government is involved. You can't walk away and say we don't have any say. But at what point does the government stop? And there are also a lot of people that would argue that paid sick days are simply vacations. That people, union contracts, you have, I don't know if the city or private contracts, you can take your paid sick days and get cash for it. Well, if you were sick.
I was talking about that this morning, earlier. And you can accrue them as well, which, again, just burdens the entire system.
Right, but and then that's not the – if you want to call it your guaranteed vacation days, call it vacation days. If you take them because you're sick, or you take them because you want to go play golf, that's either one. That's up to you. But we'll see how that comes out.
Wall Street Journal article this morning about the mayor's budget growing more rapidly than the city budget.
The city budget has grown at about the same rate as our revenues over the last 8 to 9 years. We have a bigger population. We do a lot more. We've made all the right investments for the future. We have the safest big city in the country. 9 years in a row, crime comes down. School graduation rates up 27%. Deaths by fire and traffic down to record lows. You don't get that without spending the money. So, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you're spending too much money, but they sure like the results. The question is not, are we spending too much money? Well, it is a question, but are we doing it efficiently? That's the first. And the public has a right to do it efficiently and without corruption. And there's always going to be some inefficiencies and some I wish I'd done it this way and some the guy, you know, there's somebody that broke the law and corrupt took a bribe or whatever. But fundamentally, the public has a referendum on whether or not they like you to spend the money and like the services and whether they think you're doing it well. It's called elections. That's where you go and vote. Vote the person in, vote the person out, or the polls. You know, I always say polls don't matter, and they really don't, but they're another measure of whether people are happy. Voting with your feet, people moving into the city. They keep moving in. People can't be too upset. So a lot of people say, I don't want to spend more money, but then you say to them, okay, what services would you like to cut? There's a handful,
well, we've seen what that...
handful of them say, oh, corruption. Get serious. There was a couple of city council people that said to me, what are you talking about? The total corruption, let's assume there is a lot of it. It'd still be a fraction of 1%. That's not, you should cut it out. No argument about that. But that's balancing your budget by cutting out waste and corruption. Well, waste is somebody else's necessary service, and corruption is a small thing. And it certainly costs a lot to go after corruption. And we have a lot of people working to make sure that, or to reduce corruption and catch the bad guys. There was somebody at the police department, a woman who was alleged to have faked results in a drug lab. But keep in mind, she was caught by the police department's unit that oversees and looks for corruption. So you're spending money to... And when it comes to services, everybody says cut services, but, you know, your services are a total waste, John. Mine are important.
No, I understand, and I think to your point, because, again, it was a topic earlier this morning on this program, that people are very concerned now about the efficiency of the dollars. We're all tapped out, and are our monies being spent efficiently? And that's the question.
Yeah, and I think generally they are. And incidentally, I just brought in the former mayor of Indianapolis, who has written 5 books on government and how it should run. He knows local government, was a well-respected professor up at the Kennedy School for Government at Harvard, and he's now one of the deputy mayors, or will start actually technically June 1st, but he's been volunteering all month. He can't legally take the job until he's finished getting himself out of consulting contracts, things that are conflicts. But he's been volunteering and getting to know people and listening in meetings and all of that sort of stuff. And he will help us, as will everybody else. And every one of the deputy mayors, every one of the commissioners know, we've got to cut another $1.5 billion out of our budget, and they're doing that. This is the 8th cut of sizable in return that we've reduced the amount we spend. There are some inflators that always go up. And labor contracts, people say you've been very generous. Yes. We have been. We've raised teachers' salaries so that we're now competitive with those in the suburbs. Why? Because we couldn't attract good teachers, and now we can. And the results are in the classroom. The kids are learning. That's why you're spending the money. And you got to spend, if you want good people, you got to have good management and good people for them to manage, and you got to pay them all fairly.
All right, we got a bunch of folks who want to ask some questions. Let me see. We got one line here, I think. 800-321-0710 to your questions in the mayor. Straight ahead.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got a bunch of folks on the phone here. We're going to jump right to it. We're going to start with Ann over in New Jersey. Hello, Ann. You've got the mayor. Go.
Hi. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I'd like to know when they're going to start hiring for sanitation. My grandson has been on the list. He's from Staten Island for over 2 years.
I think the real answer is, given the economy, Ann, that they're not going to rush to do this. If anything, You probably will try to downsize the sanitation department through attrition. I don't think there'd be any layoffs in that department. But, you know, it all depends on what Albany does to us. If Albany cuts an awful lot of money out of our budget, the monies that we send to Albany and they send a little bit of it back, if they send less of it back, that's going to cause us to make economies throughout the entire system. And so, you know, whether you ask about the sanitation department or about any other department, these departments are not in the hiring mode. They're in the downsizing mode. And, you know, I'm sorry for your son. It's a sanitation department's a great job. And lots of people want to make the become members of the department. There's great benefits, and there's a great pride, and they do a spectacular job. Our streets, John, are cleaner than they've been in.
Couldn't agree more.
You know, and you just go down the street. I always play this head game. You drive down the street. How many blocks can you go before you see a piece of trash? Now, after a very windy day, you know, in Midtown, there's stuff blown around. But in a normal day, when there's normal breezes, but not more than that, it's really quite amazing how good a job these guys do. And I once looked to see whether or not the sanitation department does it cheaper or more expensively than the private sector, because people always talk about privatizing. We generate 22,000 tons of solid waste a day. It's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. Half is picked up roughly by private contractors, they're carters. They do commercial buildings and industrial. And then half is done by the sanitation department, that's residential. And it's a little bit hard to make the comparison because the sanitation department also does the street sweeping and the baskets at the corners.
Snow removal.
And snow removal, that's like. But when I did looked at it, it was surprisingly roughly the same. The sanitation department is very efficient. John Daugherty runs it, and he's been the sanitation commissioner for 8 1/3 years now, but he was a sanitation commissioner
ever. He's lived there.
Before.
He was born there.
Yeah, and then retired, and then I convinced him to come back and do this. And it's a great department, but I think, Ann, they're not going to expand for the moment.
All right, Annie, thanks. Viviana is next. Viviana, your question for the mayor.
Hello, Mayor.
Hi.
I want to appreciate and thank you for everything you're doing to protect us above ground. Sir, I wanted you to consider a hypothesis. If we spend the majority of the money for above ground targets, would it not possibly cause the terrorists to shift strategy to the subways?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that, Vivian. If you look, Paris, London, Moscow, they've all had, you know, subways, lots of places. Subways are natural targets. And keep in mind, the New York City Police Department provides subway security, not for Long Island Railroad or for Metro North. That's the MTA police department. They have their own police department. But the old transit police, which got merged into the New York City police, so now it's one big agency, they provide the security underground, and they do a great job. And you see them there. They walk the cars, they walk the stations, the platforms, they search bags randomly, that sort of stuff. The problem is that the MTA doesn't have any money to use technology like the cameras in London or hardening some of the tunnels or that sort of thing. They don't have the monies to use to make the subway safer or more efficient. And if you don't make them more efficient, we're always going to have this problem of our costs keep going up. You can only get costs under control with technology. We had an idea of how you do this. You charge cars coming into the city. That would get more people to leave their cars at home, take the subways and buses. That'd be more revenue for the MTA. And the monies you collected on the bridges and tunnels you would use. And Albany said no. We had every union, every agency, virtually every advocacy group. We had the majority of the people in all five boroughs. In the end, people signed on. And then Albany said no, they had a better plan. Well, until they come up with a better plan, it's now 2 or 3 years later, they haven't come up with a better plan. We don't have any money, and Vivian's right. That is a vulnerability.
And also taking some of those MTA token booth people out, obviously. If you had your druthers, you wouldn't do that. All right, we got to go, sir. We're out of time once again.
See you next week.
Thank you very much. I will look forward to it. And everybody, have yourselves a good weekend. We're back here on Monday morning, and we've got New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, the tri-state area. We got it covered. It's 9 o'clock.
You just heard John Gambling.